Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio at the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. The governor is taking action, cracking down on water hogs. And speaking of hogs, a pork truck caught on fire out in East County. San Diego City has reached an agreement to settle its case involving lawsuits against the San Diego Police Department over sexual misconduct cases. And then on our green scene, hear why bees are hooked on nicotine. We'll have an update today on local efforts to help raise relief funds for the people of Nepal, where the quake toll has risen to over 4,500 people. Our newsmaker interview today is with Jana Clark with the Cleveland National Forest Foundation, and she'll be talking about their Transit First plan, their lawsuit against SANDAG, and we'll also tell you about some hearings coming up over the SANDAG proposed regional transportation plan and what East County Magazine is doing to try to bring some hearings out to the rural and mountain areas of East County. The Supreme Court is hearing a case that could determine whether lethal injections violate the U.S. Constitution. Sheriff's deputies following an extension cord made a surprising find, and we'll have details. If you're a babysitter, you'll want to stay tuned and hear about a class for babysitters that's being offered by the City of La Mesa. And then on Destination East County, we'll be telling you about some amazing events coming up this week, from music festivals to garden tours and much, much more. We'll be replaying our interview with Joel Gossett with the Circle Players about their Cafe Murder Dinner Theater performances coming up this weekend. We'll have a warning for you about some dangerous new varieties of spice, a synthetic drug that's causing hospitalizations across America. On Tribal Beat, Leon Thompson will give us some highlights from Winona LaDuke's presentation at San Diego State University. And we'll have details about a Harley-Davidson recall and a poetry prize won by a San Diego State University professor. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. Vermont Senator and former Governor Bernie Sanders has announced he will run for president, challenging Hillary Clinton for the Democratic nomination. Sanders isn't your typical presidential contender. He's been the only independent member of Congress since 2006, until announcing he will run as a Democrat for the presidency. He's also an avowed Democratic socialist, a progressive, and he's Jewish. Senator Sanders has been a vocal advocate for economic justice, denouncing the growing income gap between billionaires and ordinary working Americans. In typical low-key Sanders style, the senator did not hold a press conference or set up an elaborate webpage. Announcing his candidacy in an email to his supporters, Sanders said Thursday, "This campaign is not about Bernie Sanders. It is about a grassroots movement of Americans standing up and saying enough is enough. This country and our government belong to all of us, not just a handful of billionaires." He has called for a massive investment in infrastructure projects to put Americans to work. He voted against the Bush bailout of big banks and, unlike Clinton, voted against the first Gulf War. He supports universal health care, co-sponsored a major bill to combat global warming, opposes the Keystone Pipeline, and is against the Trans-Pacific Trade Pact, which Clinton has not yet taken a stand on. "Don't underestimate me," Sanders states, adding, "We're in this race to win." It's worth noting that just 8 years ago, many political analysts didn't think Americans would elect a black liberal senator with a middle name Hussein. But Sanders lacks both the party machine and backing of big money interests. His site on Facebook has attracted nearly a million likes, but most political analysts consider Sanders a long shot to wind up in the White House. Still, his candidacy changes the campaign, forcing a focus on issues he will no doubt bring up in debates and on the campaign trail. Sanders' run for the presidency could pull Hillary Clinton to the left and prevent the growing pack of Republican contenders from dodging debate on issues such as income inequality. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Watch out, water hogs. Governor Jerry Brown announced plans Tuesday to give local governments the power to levy fines of up to $10,000 for those who violate rules on water limits amid a fourth year of drought. That's a big jump from the $500 a day in the past. The highest fines would apply only to the worst offenders, said Brown. The governor made the announcement after meeting with 14 mayors, including San Diego's Mayor Kevin Falconer. Brown also pledged to fast-track review of local water supply projects. The State Water Resources Control Board will vote next week on a controversial set of conservation goals that could force some districts to slash water use up to 36%. San Diego would have to cut its water use 16%, but water districts serving La Mesa, El Cajon, and Leven Grove would face 20% cuts. Ramona's water district faces a whopping 28% cut, while some North County districts, such as Valley Center and Fallbrook, are being asked to slash water use by more than a third, or 36%. Some water districts have argued that such hefty cuts are unfair and possibly illegal, not taking into account past conservation. But the state claims it based the cuts on actual water use in each district, with higher use areas being asked to cut the most. Projects to be streamlined include San Diego's Pure Water Project that would convert sewage into drinking water. The streamlining would not apply to dam projects, however. This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community. At La Mesa's City Council hearing on Tuesday, the Council heard a report detailing the city's progress on reducing its carbon footprint in order to combat climate change. After the presentation, Councilmember Christine Alicio proposed rolling back that progress, however, and here's what she had to say.
The science has changed behind climate change in the last 10 years. Maybe at some point we need to reconsider being part of the U.S. Mayor's Climate Protection Agreement. I read it and it reads like a religious dogma, and it's great to recycle, it's great not to pollute, but the idea that cutting greenhouse gas emissions in La Mesa is going to make one difference anywhere, and if they're even linked to climate change, is a little peculiar, just food for thought in the future, but I appreciate your efforts.
Her comments drew swift responses from environmental leaders and the city's former mayor. Professor Kathleen Connell, a PhD, CEO, and founder of the Green Startup Institute in San Diego, has chaired the Sustainability Alliance of Southern California. A founder of Astrobiology Science at the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, or NASA, Connell has received the NASA Public Service Medal and is an expert on sustainability issues who has advised the White House, California local governments, and the private sector. Dr. Connell told East County Magazine that while science does change and progress through peer-reviewed studies, quote, climate change science has not changed in the way Councilwoman Alicio would like us to believe. Let's stick to credible sources on science, not talking points from the climate change deniers' briefing book. Dr. Connell then provided these facts on climate science. NASA's Climate Watch, Vital Signs of the Planet, shows that as of March 2015, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, reported that the climate change trend is increasing as the rise of heat-trapping gases in the atmosphere continues. The trend has been clear for many decades, and the trend that matters has not changed except to move upwards. She provided a chart documenting that dramatic rise from NASA's website, which you can now view on our site as well at eastcountymagazine.org in our Green Scene section. Former Mayor Art Madrid signed the U.S. Mayor's Climate Protection Agreement on behalf of La Mesa, becoming the first mayor in San Diego County to do so. The council adopted that agreement at the mayor's urging back in 2007. I asked former Mayor Madrid for his response to Alicio's proposal to undo his achievement. Madrid retorted, "Just consider the source of who is making those asinine remarks." He noted that Alicio also opposed regulation of electronic cigarettes or vaping. The councilwoman went so far as to light up and smoke from her council seat, violating a city anti-smoking ordinance in public meetings as a protest to efforts to protect public health by restricting e-cigarettes. Now, as for La Mesa's actual progress on its climate action plan, the report revealed that the city has targeted reducing greenhouse gas pollution in 12 different areas. The planning department has prepared a climate action plan funded by SDG&E's Emerging Cities Program, with a draft due for release in May. La Mesa had a 71% increase in solar photovoltaic systems last year. The council adopted two new property assessed clean energy, or PACE, programs, Hero and Fig Tree, and Hero financed 32 completed solar projects. La Mesa also has a recycling rate that is a whopping 40% higher than the state required last year, and the city collected over 80 tons of recycled material with help from EDCO. Through its downtown village streetscape that's now in progress, the city is also encouraging use of transit, walking, and bikes as alternatives to vehicles that emit greenhouse gas emissions. A natural gas fueling station will be completed in La Mesa in July. La Mesa's Public Works Department has also installed devices on vehicles to reduce idling and improve fuel efficiency. In addition, the city recently participated in the Earth Day Fair in Balboa Park to promote its climate action plan and other sustainability programs. All actions that could be rolled back if Councilwoman Alicio's proposal to withdraw La Mesa from the U.S. Mayor's Climate Action Program moves forward. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
San Diego's City Council on Tuesday approved a $1.5 million settlement in payouts to women who sued the city over sexual misconduct and abuse charges involving San Diego police officers. Three women claimed they were sexually abused by former officer Christopher Hayes, who faced criminal charges. Another alleged that Officer Daniel Moncrief groped her and exposed himself to her after arresting her. He was not charged with the crime, but later left the police force. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barena.
A semi-truck burst into flames on Interstate 8 near Lake Jennings Park Road in Lakeside on Thursday, turning its load of frozen meat into smoked pork. The driver reported that his brakes were on fire shortly before realizing that his load, too, was in flames. The driver managed to pull over and leap from the truck before the truck exploded, shooting flames 20 feet into the air, KNSD-TV reports. The flames also ignited a small brush fire, which charred a quarter of an acre along the highway before the firefighters extinguished the blaze. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Leon Thompson for East County Magazine reporting on the disappearance of bees. Researchers from Queen Mary University of London recently found that bumblebees that have been infected by parasites seek out flowers with nicotine in the nectar, likely to fight off the infection. The nicotine appears to slow the progression of disease in infected bees, but has harmful effects when consumed by healthy bees. Consumption leads to reduced appetite and shorter lifespans. Professor Geraldine Wright, lead scientist on the study at the University of Neuroscience at Newcastle University, wrote, "Even worse, we now have evidence that bees prefer to eat pesticide-contaminated food. Apparently, the nicotine in the neonicotinoid pesticide affects bees like cigarettes affect humans." Professor Wright goes on to say, "The fact that bees show a preference for food containing neonicotinoids is concerning. The findings suggest that even if alternative food sources are provided for bees in regions where neonicotinoids are used, the bees may still prefer to feed on the contaminated crops. Another concerning factor is that neonicotinoids can also contaminate wild plants growing near human-planted crops, meaning they are a larger part of bees' diets than was previously believed." The findings were published in a recent edition of the journal Nature, which concluded public concern over the impact of neonicotinoids on bees and other important pollinators has been on the rise. This month, the European Union introduced a temporary ban on the use of neonicotinoid pesticides on flowering crops until further scientific research has been conducted on the subject.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Relief efforts continue to help victims of the devastating 7.8 earthquake that struck Nepal last weekend, killing over 4,500 people thus far. Four hikers with ties to San Diego were trapped in Kathmandu, but now KNSD-TV reports that they have been rescued. A candlelight vigil was held Tuesday night at UCSD for the missing hikers, who are now on their way home. East County Magazine correspondent Bonnie Baranoff visited the Himalayan Cuisine restaurant in La Mesa to speak with the owner, Kem Karel, a native of Nepal. He told us his immediate family in Kathmandu, his 84-year-old mother, his brother, brother's wife, and other family members are thankfully fine, just scared and hungry. He has been in touch with this family briefly by phone 2 times since the epicenter of the massive 7.8 magnitude earthquake struck the remote village of Barpak in the northern central Gorkha district, about 50 miles northwest from Nepal's capital, Kathmandu, on April 25th. Lack of electricity makes charging mobile phones a luxury, so getting through to talk to anyone is a challenge. Like most outside observers, Mr. Carell is watching and learning about developments from news and social media. He told us, people have no food, no water, and are in need of medical supplies. It's very sad. The first time he spoke with his family, he said they only had about a minute to talk, and then his phone crashed. But when he spoke with them again on Sunday, they told him that they are okay, not to worry, and they are outside on the ground. He commented that it was good that the quake happened on a weekend day, when no one was at school or at the office. People were outside at noon instead of indoors, where more people could have been buried by falling bricks and cement. Mr. Carell and his family have been in La Mesa for several years and are no strangers to earthquakes or the devastation they can cause. They previously lived in Los Angeles and owned an Italian restaurant in North Hollywood when the 1994 Northridge earthquake struck. Having experienced a 6.7 magnitude earthquake, he understands that on the Richter scale, every additional point means that the quake is exponentially more powerful. Many people are calling and emailing the restaurant asking how they can help the people of Nepal. Mr. Carell is planning a fundraiser at the Himalayan restaurant next week. The day and time will be announced. In the meantime, he suggests people visit Sri Pashupatinath Foundation USA to make donations so that any aid can get directly to the people who need it most. Mr. Rishi Punakar Dakal, Vice President of the Sri Pashupatinath Foundation USA and Honorary Consulate of Nepal to the U.S. in San Diego, shares that he is quite busy with everything and that their mission is to help Nepal. He told us, the government is going to remote parts of the country. With helicopters and time, they are making progress, but people don't have food, medication, clothes, or tents as heavy rains continue to fall. 100% of the donations to the Nepal Earthquake Emergency Fund go directly to the government of Nepal, including purchase of tents in India that are being sent to Kathmandu, Dakal says, adding, the villages are all collapsed, and there is very limited contact in those remote areas. Tax-deductible donations to the Nepal Earthquake Emergency Fund can be made by calling 562-864-7600. Himalayan Cuisine, located at the corner of El Cajon Boulevard and Baltimore Drive in La Mesa, is also accepting donations on behalf of the Nepal Earthquake Emergency Fund. In addition, a Help Nepal Earthquake Victims Fund has been set up by UCSD students at www.gofundme.com. Just search for Help Nepal Earthquake Victims. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ. The San Diego Association of Governments, or SANDAG, has released a $200 billion 35-year regional growth plan for the county that's titled San Diego Forward, the Regional Plan. It lays out SANDAG's visions for transportation, sustainability, and growth through 2015. Several public hearings are going to be held around the county, but only one of those is in East County so far, and that's on May 13th at 6 p.m. in La Mesa's Community Center. No hearings have been scheduled in East County's mountain, desert, or rural areas. Now, we asked the county why no hearings are scheduled in those areas, especially since the rural, mountain, and desert communities don't have adequate public transit, making it hard for people to travel long distances to attend hearings in San Diego or even La Mesa. The county responded by saying it could hold additional workshops if community groups will partner with them to make sure there's enough people there. We contacted Supervisor Diane Jacobs' office, but she's no longer on the SANDAG board, and her office expressed frustration over this situation. She referred us to SANDAG, where David Hicks, SANDAG's communication manager, says SANDAG will hold workshops and is actively looking for opportunities to do that. Now, if you cannot attend any of these meetings, they will be streamed live online. You can view the plan online at sdforward.com, and you can submit comments online or choose options to send in comments by mail, by fax, or by phone. You can also find a list of other workshops planned in the county in May at that site, sdforward.com. And as for the issues of low-income communities lacking transit access, also, Mr. Hicks mentioned that SANDAG is going to be holding some hearings coming up later in the year on something called a coordinated plan that identifies gaps in transit in rural areas in hopes of getting some federal grants for that. But today we're going to be talking in depth about SANDAG's San Diego Forward Regional Plan on Transportation, and I'd now like to introduce a very special guest today. I would now like to introduce a very special guest. We have with us today Jana Clark. Jana is a board member with the Cleveland National Forest Foundation, and they are suing SANDAG over its regional transportation plan. The case has gone all the way to the California Supreme Court, as we previously discussed somewhat on the show. The Cleveland National Forest Foundation has come up with its own version of a transit plan. You can take a look at that at transitsandiego.org. And we're going to be talking about that in depth today. Jana, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Miriam. It's great to be here.
So can you sum up for our listeners, in your view, what is wrong with SANDAG's regional plan?
Absolutely. The focus with SANDAG's regional plan is it's very freeway heavy, and they're expanding freeways and roadway capacity while they're doing very little for transit, and they've pushed transit out to the further phases of the plan. So we won't see transit built for many, many years. And then even when that's done, it's not a very comprehensive transit plan, so we're not going to have the effective comprehensive transit system that we need to serve the region.
Now, I understand that the California Supreme Court has weighed in. They've agreed to hear one issue from the lawsuit, and the other issues were decided in your favor by the appellate court, and I understand that those will stand. The Supreme Court has declined to weigh in on them, which means that's basically the law. Can you give us some details on that?
Yes. So the Supreme Court upheld four of the issues from the appellate court. They said that SANDAG's Regional Transportation Plan Environmental Review failed on four accounts. It failed to look at a reasonable range of alternatives. It failed to analyze farmland loss impact, and that's 55,000 acres of farmland loss. It failed to analyze health impacts for the region, and it failed to mitigate the climate change impacts of the plan. The only issue that the Supreme Court is hearing is whether or not a regional transportation plan should be analyzed against Executive Order S-305, which is a greenhouse gas reduction target, former Governor Schwarzenegger's reduction target for the year 2050.
Now, since that ruling, what has SANDAG done? Are they taking any action to correct those four issues?
We're worried that the new regional plan update looks very much like the old plan. There are still many freeway expansions. It's a little soon to tell because we haven't seen the environmental impact report, which is coming out in May. Mm-hmm. But from what we can tell, it's more of the same. It's more business as usual, and we're not going to have the transit system and transit-first projects that we need for the region.
What are a couple of the big freeway expansions that they want to do before doing any mass transit?
So some of the big freeway expansions that we're actually starting to, one that we're fighting right now is the I-5 expansion up the North Coast, and that's actually adding four lanes to an already eight-lane section of the I-5, and that's in a corridor where you have the coaster. So that's the best place possible for double-tracking the coaster and doing transit first, but instead they're expanding the freeway and maintaining business as usual and keeping us dependent on the auto in the time of climate change and drought, which makes no sense for our region.
Yeah. I understand there's a doozy of a plan in the works for 94, Highway 94.
Yeah, 94 is another one we have our eye on as well. They're looking at expansion of the 94. And in fact, one of the options on the table is double-deckering part of the 94, especially where it comes into the downtown area.
Double-deckering.
A double-decker freeway.
Kind of like that, the one that collapsed up there in the Bay Area during the earthquake.
Right.
That sounds a little risky, maybe.
And dumping traffic into our downtown area, which is already congested with traffic.
Why is the Cleveland National Forest Foundation so concerned with transit in these urban areas, Jana?
Well, we look at backcountry projects and big sprawling projects that are destroying our backcountry, destroying our forests, destroying our habitat. And instead of fighting project by project, we said, well, what is the qualifying factor for these projects? They all need to have transportation infrastructure. And the only infrastructure to access these big sprawling mega projects are freeway expansions.
Yeah.
So in order to tackle the root cause of the problem, we decided to get involved with transportation issues and look at freeway expansions from looking at SANDAG's transportation planning.
So if people don't want to see these mega development projects that are, you know, basically paving over the backcountry,
large quantities of it, also impacting water supplies and putting a lot of pressure on other resources out there. What can people do to speak out or get involved?
Well, it's important to ask for a transit-first alternative. And people can go down to these SANDAG meetings, and they have public comment available at any of the board meetings or any of the meetings at SANDAG. I know it's a little bit difficult to get all the way downtown to SANDAG, mm-hmm. but it's critical to let your voice be heard. You can also email or send in public comments to SANDAG on this draft environmental impact report, which is a really good time to comment on the new San Diego Forward Plan that's coming out in May. And it's important to look at the failures of the plant, the greenhouse gas emissions, the impacts, the traffic congestion impacts. And it's important to bring up issues such as transit first and no transit first alternative, looking at greenhouse gas emissions and health impacts and whether or not SANDAG has analyzed those impacts. And people can get involved by volunteering with the Cleveland National Forest Foundation. By joining our efforts, we can help guide you in your comments for SANDAG if you want to join our team and work with us. We have internships, opportunities, volunteer opportunities as well.
Very good. Now, I understand that you have a transit plan of your own that you've proposed, which people can take a look at transitsandiego.org. And you also have a brand new report out. What are some of the highlights of that report, Jana?
Yeah, the 5010 Transit Plan Quantifying the Benefits is a new report by Norman Marshall of Smart Mobility. And it's excellent because it looks at SANDAG's data. It uses SANDAG's own growth forecasts and demographics and social forecasts to conclude that we don't need any new roadway capacity to serve all future growth through the year 2050. And that's a huge conclusion to make. That's a huge statement. We do not need to expand our freeways or our roadways to serve the 31% future growth that we see coming into our region. And that's because SANDAG has that future growth slated for already high density areas. They have it put in the urban core, in the Sprinter corridor, in the Coaster corridor, in the Blue Line corridor, areas where we have high density in population and areas that must be served by transit, bike, and walk. So he estimates that we'll need a 200% increase in transit trips and a 100% increase in walk trips to serve this future growth.
Interesting. You know, speaking of transit problems, certainly in the rural and mountain areas, transit is a big issue. There's basically almost none. There's certainly no trolley, no coaster, which wouldn't be practical up there. But even bus service is really spotty. I know I've talked to people that say, you know, there's only certain days of the week you can even get a bus into town at all. It can take many hours each direction. Now, I understand that your plan, of course, focuses on the urban core first, the first couple of phases, but there's a third phase. Does that address improving transit at all in the rural areas? So if people in the rural areas or the mountain areas need to get to the doctor or come into town, they don't have to wait hours or even days for a bus to do that.
Yes, we envision an improved transit service for the entire region. It's important to have options and to be able to get out of your car and to not rely on an independent auto for every time you need to make a trip.
If you had one message that you would like to send to SANDAG, what would you recommend people say when they post their comments to SANDAG on proposed plan at sdforward.com?
What we need to see is a transit-first alternative and one that halts any future freeway expansion in that time so we can focus our monies on building transit, bike, and walk infrastructure so that we can serve our future growth without increasing climate change, without increasing air pollution and health impacts, and for a healthy, vibrant, walkable, livable San Diego.
Now, your plan, I understand, really flips everything on its ear. What is the timetable under your plan for getting these things done, and do you address the funding issues in there?
So the first phase of our plan will be finished in the first decade, in the next decade.
Sorry. Basically taking things that SANDAG wants to do in 50 years, and you want them to do them in 10.
Yes.
And how would that get accomplished?
Well, we would need to see a shift in funding. So Transnet is right now allocated one-third to transit, one-third to highways, and one-third to surface roads and streets. So the first step would be for the SANDAG board to vote, and they need a supermajority vote to reallocate Transnet, but they can do it. They always say they can't, but they can. They need to vote to reallocate highway monies from Transnet away from highways and towards transit monies.
It's also worth noting, listeners, that each city and county in our region has representatives on the SANDAG board. So if you're in La Mesa or El Cajon or Lemon Grove or Poway or wherever, you can find out who your SANDAG representative is. Typically, it's either a mayor or a city council member assigned, and you can certainly speak with them directly about any concerns that you may have and what direction you would want SANDAG to go in addition to the formal comments on the plan that you can make online at sdforward.com. And again, if you want to weigh the alternative that Cleveland National Forest Foundation is coming up with, you can look at their plan at transitsandiego.org. Jana, I'm going to let you have the final say here today. What else would you like our listeners to know?
Thank you, Miriam. Thank you for having this great topic on transportation on the air. It's important for us to realize that we can make an impact with our voice and that we can influence our representative at the SANDAG board. And that can be done by showing up, but it can be done as simply as emailing your SANDAG representative. So it's important to look at what SANDAG is up to and to hold them accountable for their decision-making on the SANDAG board and ask that your representative speak out for and vote for transit first when they are representing you on the SANDAG board.
Very good. Listeners, if you just tuned in, we've been speaking with Jana Clark with the Cleveland National Forest Foundation about their transit alternative called Transit San Diego. Thank you so much, Jana, for joining us today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you so much for having me.
1 year ago, a botched execution in Oklahoma left an inmate, Clayton Lockett, writhing in pain for 43 minutes before dying of a heart attack after the execution was halted. This week, the U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments about the constitutionality of lethal injection procedures. Justice Elena Kagan said that without proper sedation, use of the drug midazolam is akin to being burned at the stake only from the inside out. But Justice Samuel Alito blamed what he called an abolitionist movement for pressuring drug makers to stop making less painful drugs available to states for executing prisoners. Justices previously upheld lethal injections in 2008, stating that it was not a violation of the cruel and unusual punishment prohibition in the Constitution. But those drugs are no longer widely available, causing states to experiment with alternatives. Before 2010, lethal injections in the U.S. were usually done with a combination of an anesthetic to kill pain, a paralytic drug, and a third drug to stop the heart, according to the Death Penalty Information Center. But the maker of sodium thiopental, the anesthetic, stopped making the drug, and another company providing an alternative, pentobarbital, has said it will no longer ship to American prisons that conduct executions. Oklahoma's Attorney General Scott Pruitt insisted in arguments before the High Court that Oklahoma's lethal injection protocol does not present a substantial risk of severe pain and cannot be considered cruel, blaming the past problem on dosage. But over a dozen pharmacology professors submitted a court brief saying that midazolam cannot be considered an appropriate substitute for drugs that were previously used to make a prisoner unconscious before a lethal drug was injected. Several states have dropped use of midazolam, and others are adopting other execution methods or temporarily halting executions pending the outcome of the Supreme Court case. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Ed Barena.
This is Leon Thompson with the Crime Beat Report. Sheriff's Deputy Manning was patrolling Harbison Canyon Road in the unincorporated areas of El Cajon last week when he spotted a long extension cord. Following the cord, he found a large greenhouse filled with marijuana plants and more pot plants growing next to an RV. The property owner, William Cody Leck, admitted to having a large cultivation as well as materials to produce butane honey oil. He consented to a search, which found 60 marijuana plants, 98 pounds of processed marijuana, and a complete butane honey oil lab, including 6 cases of butane. Leck was arrested for manufacturing butane honey oil, cultivation of marijuana, and possession of marijuana for sale.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County includes a murder mystery dinner theater, two major musical festivals, a wine tasting event, a garden tour, a Cinco de Mayo celebration, and more.
Plus, we'll also have a preview of coming attractions, including Explorer Mission Trails, Ramona's Old West Days, Wild in the Country at a Wildlife Rescue Facility, a Fiddler's Competition, and much, much more.
You're invited to a howling good time at the Coyote Music Festival at Cuyamaca College on Sunday, May 2nd from 12 to 4 p.m. Six homegrown bands playing an eclectic mix of folk, jazz, pop, and rock at the Coyote Music Festival noon to 4 p.m. Saturday, May 2nd. Now in its seventh year, the entirely student-run festival will provide the community a free afternoon of live music by local talent, where picnic blankets and lawn chairs are the best seats in the house. For students enrolled in a music industry studies, the festival represents a term project, the culmination of a semester's work, learning every aspect of putting on a big music event, preparing for careers in the music industry. Along with the music, vendors selling jewelry, kettle corn, and more will be a part of the festival. For details, see cuyamaca.edu.
Cafe Murder will be presented by the Circle Players of East County, a new community theater group, May 1st through May 3rd at Richardson Hall in El Cajon at 1531 Farragut Circle. This fun murder mystery comedy is for all ages. The leading character, who is allergic to water, is celebrating her birthday at a restaurant with her sisters. The birthday girl disappears and is presumed murdered. Everyone has a motive, and everyone is a suspect. Was it one of Rosemary's sisters, or the self-taught detective, or the passionate French chef, or the sarcastic waiter? You will find lots of laughs while trying to figure it out. The only witnesses in the restaurant are the audience members, who get involved by casting their vote. The Circle Players is part of the First Presbyterian Church of El Cajon's Neighbor to Neighbor program, established as a drama theater outreach to the East County. Reservations are required. For information on showtimes or tickets, visit firstpress-elcajon.org.
The 9th Annual Campo Lake Marina Roundup is set for Saturday, May 2nd at the Camp Lockett Event and Equestrian Facility at 799 Forest Gate Road in Campo. Gates open at 7 a.m. with opening ceremonies at 9 a.m. and presentation of this year's Grand Marshal at 10 a.m. Guests are welcome to wear period costumes. You can enjoy a day in the country and witness how the cowboys ride, rope and brand cattle in the ranch branding competition, watch or try your luck in the Gene Martinez Memorial Horseshoe Tournament. An all-day gymkhana for kids and adults will also take place. That's games on horseback. There will also be a Miss Roundup pageant, relay races, three-legged races, tug-of-war, roping in a hula hoop contest. Gunfight skits will be hosted by the Hole in the Wall gang with special guests, the Gaskells, who will reenact the famous Campo gunfight of 1875. There's also a mutton busting competition for kids under 50 pounds, as well as a stick horse race. The Camp Lockett Event and Equestrian Facility is located in Campo on the old Camp Lockett Army Base. For more information, you can visit campoleaf.org/roundup.
The 18th Annual Sage and Songbirds Garden Tour on May 1st through 3rd will feature five private home gardens plus a hummingbird haven and a raptor rehabilitation facility for close-up viewing of wildlife. The tour includes water-wise plants such as succulents and native plants from Australia, the Mediterranean, and California, as well as garden-related vendors, plant sales, music, live butterfly releases, plus cruising critters, reptiles, and insects. For tickets and a schedule, visit chirp.org.
The second annual INCOPA Classic Desert Concert will be held on May 2nd. This outdoor high desert concert will be held at the Desert View Tower, a state historical monument perched on a rocky hillside overlooking the Anza-Borrego Desert. The INCOPA offers music lovers and naturalists alike a chance to experience an overnight event featuring multiple bands within our southwest region. For tickets and details, visit INCOPA2.brownpaperticket.com.
The third annual Mardi Gras Tardi Gras Ball will be presented by the Alpine Education Foundation on Saturday, May 2nd from 6:30 to 10:30 p.m. at the Alpine Community Center. All proceeds benefit the Alpine Education Foundation to help Alpine schools and students. The event will feature a Cajun-inspired buffet dinner, no-host bar, and live music by Theo and the Zydeco Patrol, plus a live auction, costume parade, and crowning of the Mardi Tardi Ball King and Queen at the Alpine Education Association's event. For tickets, visit acf4kids.net.
The San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra will present two for the show on Sunday, May 3rd at 3 p.m. at College Avenue Baptist Church at 4747 College Avenue, San Diego. The concert features two major choral works, Giacchino Rossini's Stabat Mater and John Reuter's Feel the Spirit. For tickets, visit sandiegofestivalchorus.org.
The 25th annual Vintage Alpine will be held on Sunday, May 3rd from 1 until 4 p.m. at Summers Pass Farms in Flynn Springs. Vintage Alpine will feature tasting of 40 wines plus foods from fine restaurants across our region. This event attracts over 500 people annually, with all proceeds used to benefit services and programs for the children of San Diego. Vintage Alpine, a wine experience in the country, is presented by the Kiwanis Club of Alpine Foundation. This event is limited to persons 21 years of age and up. Tickets can be reserved at vintagealpine.org.
Now for a preview of coming attractions. Arriba! Casa de Pico Restaurant celebrates Cinco de Mayo on Saturday and Sunday, May 4th and 5th, with performances throughout the day at Ballet Forcloyo, Mariachis and Troubadours, as well as food and drink specials. For details, visit casadepico.com.
Oh, Lions, Tigers, and Bears in Alpine invites you to Wild in the Country, Passport to the Jungle on Saturday, May 9th from 3 until 7 p.m. The Exotic Animal Rescue Facility in Alpine will serve up dinner, live entertainment, live and silent auctions, plus prize drawings to benefit the nonprofit's efforts to make a real difference in the lives of more than 50 rescued animals that call the sanctuary home. For tickets and details, visit lionstigersandbears.org.
The Water Conservation Garden at Queen Mecca College in Rancho San Diego hosts its annual Butterfly Festival on Saturday, May 9th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Activities include tours of a butterfly pavilion and butterfly discovery lab, workshops, a pollinator party with Miss Smarty Pants, live music, food, crafts, and jewelry by local artisans. Children are encouraged to dress as a caterpillar or their favorite winged pollinator for the pollinator party at 11:30 a.m. For more information, visit thegarden.org/butterfly.
Ramona Western Days, a living history, encampments, and gunfighter skits competition will be held Saturday, May 9th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Sunday, May 10th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Ramona Rodeo Grounds. Hosted by Ramona Old West Days and Guns of the Round Table, the encampments will feature people representing the conditions people endured in the 1800s, including mountain men, pioneers, Civil War soldiers, and cowboys. New this year is a gunfighter skit competition on Saturday and Sunday, showcasing comedies, dramas, melodramas, history, and more. For details, contact RamonaOldWestDays@gmail.com.
Grant James Vineyard in Ramona will be celebrating Mother's Day on May 9th and 10th with flowers and chocolates for every mom. For more information, visit VineyardGrantJames.com.
America on Main Street, a fun-filled family event, is being held this year on Saturday, May 16th in the downtown El Cajon area, beginning at 8 a.m. and lasting until 8 p.m. Admission is free, as are miniature pony rides, a kid-friendly petting zoo, large Ferris wheel, and varieties of games and crafts for the children. There will also be four different stages featuring live entertainment and music for your listening pleasure. For details, visit AmericaOnMainStreets.org.
Explore Mission Trails Day will be held Saturday, May 16th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Mission Trails Regional Park. This free event features free guided nature walks, talks, and programs throughout the park, including live animals and special kids programs from pony rides to a climbing wall, as well as a program in the amphitheater featuring coyotes. There will also be a bicycle demonstration and a program in the amphitheater. For details, see mtrp.org.
The Santee's Street Fair and Craft Beer Festival, organized by Santee's Chamber of Commerce, will be held on Saturday, May 23rd from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. This large festival features local breweries from around San Diego County, live music and entertainment, a crafter row and artist alley, over 300 food and vendor booths, carnival rides and games for the family in celebration of Memorial Day weekend. There will also be a tribute to veterans. Admission is free, though there is a fee for beer tasting. The location is at the junction of Riverview Parkway and Town Center Parkway. For details, visit SanteeStreetFair.com.
Julian hosts its Arts and Crafts Fair on Saturday, May 23rd from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., organized by the Julian Fireplugs. The event benefits the Julian Cuyamaca Fire Protection District and will be held at 2033 Main Street in Julian.
The California State Old Time Fiddlers Association District 7 presents the Julian Fiddle and Pickin' Contest on Saturday, May 30th at Julian's Town Hall in the historic gold mining town of Julian. Building on the decades-long history of the former Julian Banjo and Fiddle Contest, the Julian Fiddle and Pickin' Contest provides fiddlers, guitarists, mandolin players, and banjo players an opportunity to demonstrate their talents in a festive and friendly atmosphere. For details, visit sandiegofiddler.org. That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more in our calendar and in our festival and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar or would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, my very special guest is Joel Gossett, and Joel is the artistic director of the brand new Circle Players in El Cajon, and he's here today to talk about their upcoming production called Cafe Murder, a dinner murder mystery. Joel, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me, Miriam.
So, tell us about Cafe Murder. First of all, when and where is the production?
Well, Cafe Murder will be held at Richardson Hall in El Cajon. It's on Farragut Circle, 551 Farragut Circle. It's across the street from the Presbyterian Church that's in the middle of the circle. And it's going to be produced on May 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, with Friday and Saturday nights being at 7 p.m. and the Sunday, the 3rd, being at 2 p.m.
Give us a little sneak preview of what Cafe Murder will be like for the guests who attend.
Well, as guests arrive, they'll be escorted to their table in Cafe Murder. They will be seated at the table either in groups that they've chosen or with complete strangers, and that's part of the fun of it is fellowshipping yeah. with other theater goers. Mm-hmm. They'll be served a dinner, a full meal. Even the Sunday will be the full meal. And as they're finishing up the dinner, a party arrives late. It's Rosemary St. John, who is celebrating her birthday, and her four sisters arrive. And there's some conflict because they have arrived late for the dinner. Mm-hmm. And the audience then witnesses the interaction between the five sisters and the staff of Cafe Murder. And in amongst that, a crime is committed.
And so the audience becomes the witnesses to the murder?
In some respects, they don't actually see what happens, mm-hmm. but they might hear what happens.
So they have evidence of the crime.
They have evidence of the crime, and a detective arrives and presents some more evidence. And then it's realized that the detective herself has had some dealings with the victim.
Uh-oh.
And might not be objective as she should be. So therefore,
the plot thickens.
The plot does thicken. Therefore, the only witnesses, the only objective investigators to this crime are the audience themselves. And at this point, the audience has the opportunity to question all of the suspects.
There you go. You can channel your inner detective listeners if you come and help solve the crime.
Right. So the audience members will get a chance to ask three questions of each of the suspects. The suspects will rotate between the tables. They'll have 3 minutes to ask three questions. And at the end of that, the audience members get to vote on who they think committed the crime.
Marvelous. And I understand there's a prize for the winner, or at least a drawing.
There will be a drawing of those who guessed correctly, and then those names will be drawn out of a hat, and they will win a prize.
Very good. And we should add the tagline for Cafe Murder is where everyone has a motive and everyone is a suspect.
I think by the end of the audience seeing Rosemary St. John, they themselves would have a motive.
Okay, well, I'm certainly looking forward to learning more about that. Now, Circle Players is a brand new theater group here in East County. Joel, can you give us a little background about how that all came about and what the Circle Players are all about?
Why, certainly. Through the Presbyterian Church of El Cajon, we have a program called Neighbor to Neighbor. It's where we outreach to the community to provide resources to the community. Mm-hmm. We help out a group called Reality Changers, which is helping young people get into college.
We have,
in partnership with St. Albans Church, a community garden where people can actually grow in our garden plots.
I've seen that. I actually came out and covered the grand opening of that. That was a wonderful project.
And we have other projects, city beautification projects and things like that. So the Circle Players was a dream of mine, and I proposed it, and we mm-hmm. got approval. And so this is a community theater outreach where it is actually members of the community that are putting on this play.
Yeah, where do you get the players from? Are they church members or other members in the broader community?
It's mostly members of the broader community. I don't exclude church members from auditioning. Mm-hmm. So it's a good mix. And this is an opportunity for not only actors, but technicians, lighting technicians, sound technicians, others that want to practice their stagecraft.
Good point. Great place to get some experience.
Absolutely. And of course, a great outreach for the community members who love watching plays.
Absolutely. I'm certainly looking forward to that. In the future, what other kinds of productions do you plan to do? Will there be more murder mysteries? Will there be other kinds of dramas or comedies? What can we expect?
We're projecting and planning, and we're just in the planning stages right now, to have two other productions this year. One, a staged reading of a drama, so it won't be acted out. It's where the audience will have to use their imagination of mm-hmm. what's going on. There will be a narrator, but it is a drama. Some light comedy in it, but a drama. And then in the fall, perhaps another murder mystery, and one that I'm looking at has a Western theme.
Ooh.
Where the audience will be transported, or the audience will be attending a dude ranch, and the audience members will be encouraged to dress as if they are at a dude ranch.
Well, that sounds like fun, and it sounds like something that would be pretty popular out here in East County.
I'm sure everybody has something that they could wear.
You think a cowboy hat or some boots tucked away in the closet there?
Absolutely.
Very good. Now, where can people get more information about tickets or get reservations?
Well, for more information or for tickets, they can call area code 619-442-2583. And that's the main number to our church, and they will take care of it themselves or refer you to someone else. Or you can email to firstpresec, and I'll spell that, firstpresec, at sbcglobal.net.
And listeners, if you didn't catch all of that, don't worry. You can just go to eastcountymagazine.org and click on our calendar or our arts and music section, and we will also have all that information there for you. We have been speaking with Joel Gossett, the artistic director of the brand new Circle Players in El Cajon, about their upcoming production May 1st through 3rd of Cafe Murder. Joel, thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you very much.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is East County Magazine's Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities. The Conrad Pribus Student Center at San Diego State University was filled as Winona LaDuke took the stage, dwarfed by the giant screen depicting the past splendor and future possibilities of her native White Earth Nation. In the language of the Anishinaabe, she brought greetings and recounted the Ojibwa names for the months or moons, noting that not one of them was named after a Roman emperor. August is Menominiki, or the rising moon, and January, the Geechee Manadu, the great spirit moon. Each moon brings us closer to the earth, God, and each other. Traditional Anishinaabe religion is LaDuke's source of power and sustenance. Part of the mythology that they've been teaching you is that you have no power. Power is not brute force and money. Power is in your spirit. Power is in your soul. It is what your ancestors, your old people, gave you. Power is in the earth. It is in your relationship to the earth. She once told Mother Jones magazine, "What we all need to do is find the wellspring that keeps us going, that gives us the strength and patience to keep up this struggle for a long time." Clearly, Winona has that wellspring as she delivered the keynote address to cap off a magnificent student-inspired Earth Day Green Fest. Internationally acclaimed American Indian environmental activist Winona LaDuke founded Honor the Earth and is a leader in opposition to new extreme fossil fuel encroachments in North America. A lawsuit against the U.S. State Department for an approval process of a tar sands pipeline will be heard in July. It puts Winona in front of the bulldozers. Winona came to live on the White Earth Reserve as a high school principal in the 1980s. She's the founder of the White Earth Land Recovery Project, one of the largest reservation-based nonprofit organizations in the country, working to protect indigenous plants and heritage foods from patenting and genetic engineering. The WELRP is working to recover the 800,000 acres of land that was originally the White Earth Reservation. A graduate of Harvard and Antioch Universities, Winona has written extensively on Native American and environmental issues. She is a former board member of Greenpeace USA and serves as co-chair of the Indigenous Women's Network. You could hear a pin drop in the giant student center as Winona related the amazing Pawnee corn seed experience. In the Pawnee creation account, the original woman comes wrapped in a corn husk. In the mid-1800s, the Pawnee were forcefully removed from their homeland in Nebraska and relocated to the middle of Oklahoma. They brought with them the staples of their diet and the special corn for which they were known. However, their seeds would not grow. A museum in Nebraska asked if they had seeds they could donate to the museum for an exhibit there. The seeds remembered their home. The seeds flourished. Likewise, Menomon, or wild rice, the food that grows on water, is a gift to the Anishinaabe and part of our culture and part even of our DNA as a people. Food for us comes from our relatives, whether they have wings or fins or roots. That is how we consider food. Food has a culture, it has a history, it has a story, it has relationships. Mother Earth needs us to keep our covenant. We will do this in courts, we will do this on our radio station, and we will commit to our descendants to work hard to protect this land and water for them. Whether you have feet, wings, fins, or roots, we are all in it together. Perhaps someday Winona LaDuke will be chief of the White Earth Nation. Certainly her compassion and accomplishments on behalf of the tribe name her to be so. Winona brings a spirit and vision that inspires American Indians and indeed the world. For East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Kevin McLeod, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.